The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Shopify, the platform I'm currently in the process of migrating to. Why the move away from Magento, which I've used for years? Well, Shopify has an enormous ecosystem of developers and apps, and their template framework is really well architected. Plus, of course, they're a hosted service so I can focus on my business instead of spending hours playing system admin and troubleshooting server problems. So if you're looking for a highly customizable solution you don't need a programmer to manage, check them out at shopify.com. Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Derry. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today on the episode. So here we are all doing e-commerce work, you know, tirelessly plugging away at our businesses, but what if we've been bamboozled? What if e-commerce is just the laughingstock of affiliate marketers and info product guys or SaaS developers who are just raking in gobs of cash while we're working, you know, a quarter of the time? Well, it's something I wanted to chat about today, and that's what we're going to be covering. I'm joined by Steve Chu, once again, from mywifequitherjob.com. And we're talking about e-commerce and how that compares to other business types. We both have had experience running, of course, e-commerce stores, as well as experience with affiliate marketing and info product sales, running communities, and a number of different things. And we're going to dive into the nitty-gritty about how those different models compare, what we like about them, and if we were starting from scratch today, would we still start an e-commerce business? So it's a fun discussion. But of course, first, before we dive in, gotta do a first sale shout out. And this one's going out to Michael from anthrodesk.ca. And Michael says, I left my job 3 months ago and 2 months ago opened my store, anthrodesk.ca, which sells standing desks in Canada. I had 20K of inventory sitting in a warehouse and it was painfully watching my inbox every day. I know that feeling, Michael. Finally, I had my first sale last week, which combined with being from a supportive local customer was incredibly moving. I've now tapped into that emotional power and it's given me new strength and determination to persevere through anything that comes my way. Michael, congratulations, man. That's awesome. 100% hear you in terms of how powerful that first sale can be. And best of luck with the standing desks. I've got one myself. I'm standing right now, actually, at my desk talking on the mic here for this podcast. And it's a cool niche that you're in. Hope things continue to go well for you. All right, let's go ahead and dive into today's discussion with Steve Chu on e-commerce versus other types of businesses. So Steve, I already went over kind of the different things that I'm involved with in terms of different types of business models, but can you give listeners a quick sense of all the different stuff that you're doing? Because man, you've been doing this longer than I have, and I think you've got your finger in more pies than I even do.
I think I only got a couple of years on you, Andrew. It hasn't been that long, but
and for the record, that was meant as a mention of respect, not as a you're an old man kind of thing.
you'll start feeling your age soon. You got two kids now, Andrew, so yeah, your time is near.
Oh, I'm feeling it playing basketball after 30, and yet you start realizing you're not invincible.
So I'm in pretty much the same sort of thing that you are. It's not a lot, but I run an e-commerce store with my wife, and then I run a blog, and on that blog I make money through affiliate marketing, through advertising, and the occasional sponsored post. I actually haven't done it in like 3 or 4 years, but if there's a compelling product, I'll consider doing it. I also run an info product. It's an e-commerce course where I actually teach other people how to start their own online stores. And that's, oh, and I run a podcast. Forgot about the podcast. And occasionally I'll have sponsors on there as well. And that's pretty much it.
And you didn't mention, of course, the 9-to-5 that you're still 100% willingly doing.
I thought we were talking about businesses, but yeah, I still work a 9-to-5. I am an engineering director designing microprocessors. So that's kind of what I do during the day.
I was thinking about this, Steve. You need to release an info product called How to Leave Your Successful E-Commerce Business and Get the 9-to-5 Job of Your Dreams. I think it would be wildly successful. So e-commerce, maybe we can kick it off there because, of course, that's what we both, you know, it's kind of our wheelhouse for both of us. So what, kind of do a pros cons list on it and talk about it in general, but what do you see as the big strengths of e-commerce versus some of these other models?
So you're asking me why I sell women's handkerchiefs? Is that, that what I'm hearing?
Apart from the fact that you look beautiful and pretty, yes.
I mean, it's very manly. I do it mainly for the prestige. But, you know, okay, so you asked about e-commerce. So why did we do it? The main reason why we started with e-commerce was because it is the quickest way, I would say, to make money because you're actually selling something. So if you look at my blog, it took me probably 3 years to make even what I consider significant money because it's a slow process of building up a reputation and a following. But with a store, it's really simple. You got stuff. People pay you money for the stuff and you deliver. And so in that respect, you can also buy your traffic to get instant sales pretty much.
Yeah, right, there's something about selling something that people need. If you're trying to sell a course and nobody knows you, you know, building up your reputation, building a rapport, an audience, that takes a lot of work, right? If somebody needs to buy a CB radio or a handkerchief, you know, there's still a little bit of potentially uncertainty if it's a great product or not, but much less about a course because it's a tangible thing you can touch and see. And especially if you're selling, one of the nice things about drop shipping, at least in the very early days, is that you can sell existing products that people know. Like, you know, hey, I know Cobra radios, they're very popular. I just need someone to buy them from. And so, yeah, super easy way to get started. I love too how you can, you know, you can automate it and systemize it quite a bit. One cool thing about e-commerce is you can come in as an entrepreneur, you can set up traffic streams, you can source the products, you can get some systems in place for customer service, and you can't take off forever, but you can then bring in contractors or team members and it can be automated and systemized in a way where you can step away for long periods of time and the business continues to run well, which is something you can't do for maybe like a SaaS app that you could, but that's a little bit harder. It's more complex, or blogging or things like that. So I've always loved that about e-commerce.
So I got a question for you, Andrew. So it was true for our store. You know, we were sourcing stuff from overseas and we were selling online, but a lot of our initial sales were from pay-per-click services like AdWords. And I understand, you know, with dropshipping, the margins are a little less. So how did you guys kind of make your first initial sales in the very beginning?
Oh, it was 100% paid traffic. And it was.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't make very much. The first 36 months were pretty lean. So just because, you know, you got a lot, largely, as I talked about last week in the podcast, is you got to depend a lot on SEO for most dropshipping. And so while we were waiting for that to kick in and working on it, yeah, we were doing paid traffic. So. Yeah, but I mean, what you're doing for e-commerce, it's you got a lot higher margins. It's, again, one of my biggest regrets is you can just scale up so much more quickly, which is with paid traffic, because you got the margins to support it, which is awesome. So downsides to e-commerce, Steve, what things drive you crazy about maybe your business in particular, but overall, like just the e-commerce model, either or?
For us, we actually carry our own inventory, and so handling the shipping and that sort of thing can be a pain. And I don't know how it's like with your industry, but in the wedding industry, we deal with, what's the right way to put it? Stressed out people. So people like wait until the last minute. Like we've had customers where their wedding is literally like tomorrow and they just thought of buying some of these things and they're just like begging us to get something there the next day. And sometimes we can't, like we always try to do it, but sometimes we can't do it and they get mad at us and it's just stressful and you just have to sit there and take it. So I don't know. Does that happen to you?
People don't need rush CB radios quite as much as maybe wedding handkerchiefs, but you do get it. Yeah. You definitely do get people who, I mean, I remember one time we had a guy who ordered something and UPS, you know, there was a huge storm or something and he just really came down, you know, he comes down hard on us because it didn't get there in time. And you do have people that are sometimes unreasonable. So yeah, we get that too. I think the thing for me when I look at it is I think a lot of people, when they look at e-commerce, they think, oh, hey, getting started, this is going to be a great way to make money. I don't have to create anything new. But just like in anything, you got to create value somewhere. You got to create either, you know, your own product like you have, Steve, where you go out and you source it and you kind of put your name on it and you create your own brand. Or you got to have your own unique selling proposition for selling existing products like we do, mm-hmm. which is a lot, which is, I think, the much harder of the two models after having done it. So yeah, I think it takes more work to stand out maybe than our other models. So.
Yeah, you know, that's true to a certain extent. I mean, in your model, actually, once you've established that reputation, though, you're pretty golden, right? I think no matter whether you carry inventory or dropship, you still have to emphasize your brand. And a lot of times that can be challenging, especially if you're selling products that aren't that exciting. I mean, I'll be honest, CB radios are more exciting than linens, for example. Wouldn't you say, Andrew?
I don't know, but maybe we should do a store swap and run to a store for a week and we can find out.
I mean, what's hilarious is I used to actually take support calls for our store, and women would be asking me about lace and, you know, whether this would look good with their dress. And I'd have to be there and go, yeah, you know, I recommend the Battenberg lace because it kind of complements the train of your dress and that sort of thing. I have to say all this stuff with a straight face. So I don't know.
Did you subconsciously increase the octave of your voice by two or three notches?
No, but my wife did say that I was super, super nice, you know, on the phone. And, you know, I would be really nice. And then as soon as I'd hang up, I'm like, God, son of a, I can't believe, you know, because, you know, they're stressed. A lot of times they're stressed, especially if they need something. But for the most part, I love talking to all the brides because they're all excited, enthusiastic. You know, they haven't been married that long. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Is this going live, Andrew? Because
this is. We'll make sure your wife doesn't. You know, the woman, you know, the mother of your children, the woman whose namesake is on your blog. She won't listen to this. So I'll move on to affiliate marketing. So I don't know about. I have had, you know, it's only been a couple of years, and I don't do a lot of affiliate marketing, but I have a few things that I have affiliate links for. And when I first started getting like a reasonable amount of affiliate marketing money, it was like magic money. It just appears, and there aren't customers, you don't have to create a product. It's like somebody clicks on a link which you don't even realize unless you check it, and then you just get this check. I know I'm having a little love fest here just at the beginning of it, and there's definitely a lot of downsides to it, but did you have that reaction the first time that you started seeing that come in?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to affiliate marketing, I feel like I have to work harder for that money. Like it comes in, but you actually have to establish yourself as an authority and have people believe in you before you can even make a penny. Mm-hmm. Right? So in that respect, it was a lot harder. So I feel like I earned that money, and I don't get the same sort of magic money. It's great that you don't have to actually support the sale afterwards, which is great. And so I guess in that respect, I think of it as magical. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we probably had different approaches. I didn't start kind of experimenting with it until maybe a little bit longer into when I had built up the blog and had a little bit of an audience or a list. And so when I did start to implement it a little bit, I think it probably ramped up maybe more quickly. So yeah, it's interesting. It is hard to do though. I think you have to, it's hard to do to make the money, but I think it's also really hard to do well. I think one of the things with affiliate marketing is like, trying to know that balance between having a blog that's high quality, that's authoritative, versus and knowing when like an appropriate affiliate link is not going to detract from that, versus really spammy affiliate marketing and stuffing it everywhere and having it be very obvious that, hey, this guy, all he's trying to do is get an affiliate commission off of you. I think there's right. A fine line there.
Yeah, you know, Google's kind of nerfed those sites. Before, a lot of people used to just try to rank for a keyword for a product and then promote it that way. But you know, obviously the type that we're talking about here is where you kind of establish yourself, right? And you recommend wholeheartedly a service or a product, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But even this, I feel like I'm one of those guys who's like, I feel like I have to like disclose that these are affiliate links. And if I link to it too much, then it'll detract from the quality of the article. Do you struggle with that at all?
You know, here's the thing. I actually feel very responsible when I use an affiliate link. And in the past, it hasn't happened recently, but I've recommended a product and a reader has emailed me back saying, you know, Steve, this product was crap. Why are you recommending this to me? And I would feel just so bad. But I'd actually had used that service in the past and I was fine with it. But maybe things had changed. Maybe things had gone downhill since I'd used them. And a lot of times you feel responsible and you can't really do anything about it. That's the problem. I don't know. Has that happened to you yet or?
Not yet, fortunately. Or if it has, people haven't. I'm probably gonna get a flood of emails here after this episode. but no, not yet. That always, I hear you though. That's been one of my hesitations in terms of working with like contractors. People have said, "Oh, hey, you should just like white label services like SEO or design and just be lead gen and hand them off to people." But that sounds, because I can't control the outcome of the quality, that sounds like a nightmare.
So. Yeah, I mean, I would even go so as far as not endorse anything that you actually haven't really used yet and had a positive experience with, just to be on the safe side. A lot of people, and when they first start out, they got nothing to lose. But, you know, once you kind of have established a list and a readership and that sort of thing, it's really important to maintain that integrity.
Yeah, agreed. So selling information, info products, potentially one of the dirtiest words online traditionally with internet marketing. You have a course I know is great. I have a course as well. So we both do it. I'm interested to talk about this, you know, because obviously like on the pro side, margins don't get much better than info products. You know, they're about as good as they can get. And if you, you know, and you leverage, you know, if you have genuine experience that you can help people with and you can build a quality product, it's a great way to leverage that and make money. But there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of potential landmines in there too. So what do you think? What's your experience been selling info products so far with your course?
Selling the products has been a positive experience, but I just want to talk about like sales letters and that sort of thing. You go out there and you see a lot of spammy sales letters, right? Spammy products. And a lot of times people kind of lump you in with that. And mm-hmm. So I don't know if this has happened to you, but I occasionally get hate mail from just people who just read, they make assumptions about what I'm trying to sell. And they're like, oh, this is just another scam and that sort of thing. And so I've actually consciously made an effort to kind of tone down my sales material. Here's the dilemma. A lot of the sales tactics that you actually see on those sales pages, they work. You know, all the sensationalist stuff and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, you know, it just doesn't feel right. And I've read your sales page, and your sales page is very sincere. And I've chosen to take that model as well to sell my stuff.
Well, thanks, Steve. Yeah. When I wrote it, I tried to be very anti like internet marketer. At the very top, it's like, you know, I think I lead off with something effective. If you think you're going to build a $1 million business in 30 days, this isn't the product for you or something. But
yeah.
But I don't know if you noticed the format. It's like the old school optimized press landing page, and it's so long. It's like 3,000 words or something. And I think it's got a lot of the elements stylistically of the old school landing page, which I probably need to change. So was good. Yours was good too, though. You had you had a bunch of awesome testimonials and you walked through stuff. And I thought you did a really nice job with yours as well.
Oh yeah. Thanks. I mean, I think the key is you got to establish trust. And so I have this really long email sequence now that when someone opts in, that kind of explains everything in kind of a down to earth fashion. Like I don't really try to sell hard at all. And I found that that's worked out better, and it's actually made me feel better about what I'm selling as well. So
SaaS products. And I know you're pretty savvy technically. Good programmer. You get in and I think you've done a ton of work custom on your cart. I could barely call myself a hack when it comes to programming technical things. Have you ever thought about doing a SaaS app? And when I say SaaS app, if people aren't familiar with that, it stands for software as a service. So anything that you pay a monthly recurring fee for that you access the service online. So like Moz tools, Moz Pro would be an example, something that you do that for. So, and this isn't, I kind of threw this in here last minute, Steve, but it's not something either of us do. But have you ever thought about that? Did it ever cross your mind?
Yeah, you know, so I'm a technical guy and I can code. I wouldn't consider myself an expert coder, but something just kind of scares me about doing software as a service just because the tech support issues that can arise. But I can tell you, and while I don't have a SaaS product, I kind of run my course kind of like a SaaS model. So ever since I started introducing payment plans to my class, I found that if you don't put up the effort to keep people super interested throughout the entire process, mm-hmm. people's credit cards just miraculously start getting declined and that sort of thing. And so in that respect, when someone signs up for a payment plan for my class, it's up to me to kind of keep them interested and keep them on track, more so than before when I was just a pay one time type of model. And so in that respect, some of the things that I've done in that area is I have this really long email sequence now that kind of primes them through all the features. And I actually pump out content on a regular basis for that. And so while it's not a SaaS model, it's got some of the same principles, right? I got to constantly maintain something while at the same and supported without having to worry about the technical difficulties. I know. Do you have your form is kind of like a SaaS model, right, Andrew?
It is, yeah. I mean, in terms of churn, and churn is this idea for those that may not be familiar is what percentage of your users leave, stop paying, quit your service every month. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is. It is like that because it's subscription billing and very similar in that regard. So it's interesting. I had communities on as well as one I wanted to talk to. Communities are an interesting model. I think communities in the next 5 to 10 years are gonna really see a resurgence in popularity. I think if you make the right community and you target correctly, it can really be a big benefit to people. If you do it right, you can create it as a recurring revenue business. And they're extremely hard to rip off, right? Like it's one thing to rip off a product or even an info product, but like connections, real world connections between people, you can't duplicate that. But you know, kind of like you were alluding to on the con side, it takes a ton of work to do that right. It takes a long time to scale. Kind of a human nature perspective, if you're not really vigilant, you can really let the quality of the culture or the informational value of that community slip. So they're interesting. Communities are interesting, but they're not an easy way to riches by any means.
You know, the thing about a community is it can drastically change overnight. And so I have a buddy of mine, he used to frequent this mommy forum. And then all of a sudden they did a redesign and removed some of the features and people started complaining like crazy. And so what he decided to do is he decided to create this exact same form the way it used to be, posted a couple of posts in that original form, and everyone flocked over to his form, and the other one shut down.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, you got to be kind of careful, too. So that SaaS, it's like a maintenance thing. You always have to be improving your service and convincing people to stay, which is something you should be doing with your one-off products as well. But yeah, I think you do a really good job with your forums by sending out these digests of what the interesting topics are. And so the first thing when I see that email is I click on it and I see what the interesting topics are. And that's what keeps me engaged.
Well, that's good feedback. Thanks. And I got to commend Laura, who's our community manager. She's taken the reins on that recently. So thanks, Laura. It's interesting. You think about like Dig. I don't know if you were a Dig guy back in the day.
I was. Reddit. Yeah.
And Dig, I mean, that was one of the biggest examples where Dig was the place online, right? I mean, just for geeks like myself, at least. And they were enormous. And then one, you know, I don't know if it was over the course of just a really short period of time, a month or so, maybe 2 months, they made some big changes. People didn't like it. And just there was an exodus to Reddit. And I don't think they ever recovered from it.
No, Dig is still around today. I haven't actually been on it in like 5 years. I don't know. What about you? Actually, it's been shorter than 5 years, probably 3 years. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's been 6 months. I'll check it out. But it's a very different form. I still have a Dig sticker on the back of my car. So if you're in Bozeman, you see a guy with a Subaru and a Dig sticker, that's me.
You got a Dig bumper sticker on your car, Andrew?
I know, pretty good. Right? I'm a stylish guy. I'm a classy guy. So what would you, Steve, what would you do starting from scratch today with all these different models that you've experienced? Like, would you pick e-commerce for your first business model if you had to pick one?
So it would just depend on how soon I need the money. I would say if I want to replace a salary within a year or less, I would probably still go e-commerce. If I got time, maybe a 3 to 5 year time range, I'd probably do something info related and try to establish an audience. Actually, I wouldn't even think about a product. I'd just work on establishing an audience and then the money would come that way. I probably would not go with a SaaS model because I just don't want to do tech support. I don't know. What about you? What are your opinions?
Yeah, I think that's really good advice and almost what I would do verbatim. I think there's a ton of value in having an audience, building up a brand and a community. But yeah, e-commerce is if you want to build a meaningful business, you know, in that 12-month period to 18-month period. I think I'm with you, Steve. I do the same thing. I probably wouldn't pick drop shipping today to start out with if I had the time and the capital, just because I think it's really appealing starting out, but it's so much more difficult to scale. But yeah, I'm with you. If I was a really good programmer, I would consider doing SaaS because it's a way to leverage your skills, build recurring income, and create a unique product that actually helps people and saves people time if you do it correctly. Mm-hmm. But I think this idea... And again, maybe I'm just a guy who's overly pessimistic, but I think this idea that you can go out with no technical experience, hire a programmer on Odesk and have them run your SaaS app, if you don't have the technical chops to manage them at least, I think that's a recipe for disaster.
I think it goes more into whether you actually know what you're doing. Like, there's one thing to understand all the high level concepts and not know how to program. That's fine, because at least you know how the flow works. You know how to evaluate the work that the people that you're hiring are doing. If you can't do that, I would probably stay away from software. And that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, agreed. What do you think about diversifying across the different channels? I mean, both of us have income streams from, you know, multiple business models, from e-commerce, from affiliate, from info products, et cetera. Is that something, looking back, you're really glad that you've done? Or is it kind of the old man, I'm doing way too many things, and if I, the sum of the parts is less than what it would be if I just focused on one business?
You know, I don't know what your reasons were for pursuing the different business models, but for me, we started out, my wife wanted to quit to take care of our kids, and so we wanted to replace her salary in a year, and that's why we started our e-commerce store. And then at that point, you know, money wasn't an issue as much anymore, and so I decided to build up something a little bit more long-term, and that's why I started blogging, which was eventually going to be my retirement plan. And then I started the course mainly because people were asking for it, and I thought it'd be really fun to just kind of run a class and a forum and that sort of thing, and, you know, give an audience where I can actually interact with them one-on-one, which is what I do in my class. And the podcast is something I started because I just wanted to reach out and meet people. And so I kind of had different motives for each business, and they weren't necessarily monetarily motivated. Actually, the only thing that was monetarily motivated was the e-commerce store. So I'm curious to see what you have to say on your end.
Yeah, it's the e-commerce store was definitely started strictly for financial and freedom reasons, coming out of a job that I wanted, you know, to be able to be independent, call my own shots, and have autonomy. For e-commerce fuel, I think it was a combination. I think it was part really wanting to connect with other people in the space. I think it was seeing a need for it. Like, we're talking about all these models, you know, SaaS apps, especially affiliate marketing and info products. I feel like those have been blogged about. There's a lot of people blogging about those online, but I didn't see anyone blogging about e-commerce, like e-commerce for small individual teams, you know, not these mammoth Inc. 500 companies. So I thought there was a huge hole in the market, and it was a way I could leverage my experience to do that. And to be 100% honest, I mean, I saw an opportunity to also be able to bring in another revenue stream. So for me, it was definitely a mixture of all of those things. In the off chance you're not familiar with Steve, make sure to check out. He's got an incredible blog. He's one of the guys who I came across when I got started. MyWifeQuitHerJob.com, as well as great podcasts. If you're in the e-commerce space, or even just in the online marketing space at all, but especially e-commerce, it's one you should be listening to on a weekly basis. And of course, he's got a great course over there as well that walks through really, you know, everything, the entire process of getting a store up and running. And getting to making money. So Steve, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. It's a lot of fun. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
That's going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in launching your own e-commerce store, download my free 55-page ebook on niche selection and getting started. And if you're a bit more experienced, look into the E-Commerce Fuel private forum. It's a vetted community for store owners with at least 4,000 in monthly sales or industry professionals with at least a year or more experience in the e-commerce space. You can learn more about both the ebook and the forum at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.